Hi there, we are James and Dan, two-fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available. But if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to be talking about over the next hour. Our focus this afternoon will be on Fulham. They're just outside the playoff positions. Can they go on a bit of a run to push into those playoff positions, or do they not want to peak too soon? We'll also be talking about West Brom. They currently top the table. Slaven Bilic is doing a good job at the Baggies, but are they a risk of peaking too early in the season like Leeds did last season? We'll also be talking a little bit about Luton, not far above the relegation zone. How are they going to get on in this next period? They're 18th on 11 points. Are they able to put together a little run? Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp. This is the Championship Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over the next hour. As I said, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. A few different championship stories just to be talking about before we look at Fulham. Some interesting comments from Andrea Radrizzani, the Leeds owner, who we brought you the news over the last few days, was open to the idea of investment, said that there were a number of bids that had come in. They'd chosen three potential bids. The Qatar Sports Investment Group, that is the group that owns PSG, were potentially an option. And he was talking up the idea of being able to compete on a similar financial level to Manchester City. Now, some interesting developments over the last 24 hours with a suggestion that this is an if. And what if would be the situation if this was the case? Not concrete, that there aren't any bids on the table, that they haven't chosen three bids to choose from, and that this investment isn't close, that it's just a hypothetical situation. So Andrea has led us all on a merry goose chase, thinking that Leeds are about to be taken over by some multi-billionaire group that owns PSG. It's only a potential suggestion, if that were to happen, that Leeds could do that. So maybe Leeds fans are waking up this morning rather disappointed, thinking they were going to suddenly be pumping billions of pounds into Leeds United. And in fact, that was just a pretty big lie. He should be going on Golden Balls, shouldn't he? That show where you have to lie about what money you have in your respective Golden Balls. And maybe he should be going on that, because he's a pretty good liar about these investments. So maybe not a new investment in Leeds United in the very near future. There are still a few clubs looking for new managers. Barnsley are a club on the lookout. Daniel Stendel lost his job. Jan Sievert is the man who's the favourite. Be very surprised if he were the man to go in there. Millwall also looking for a new manager. They are interested in Gareth Ainsworth. They're also interested in Gary Rowett to take over after Neil Harris's resignation a couple of weeks ago. It's strange that we've got most of the way through the international break, still no appointment there. Obviously, Reading appointed Mark Bowen, who was their sporting director, as their new manager. Not exactly a lot of positivity coming from Reading fans, if we're being brutally honest. So a few interesting ones there. And Sunderland today, even though it's not Championship, have appointed Phil Parkinson as their new manager. We're going to be talking all things Fulham now, and alas to say, we are joined by Love Sport's very own and man from Fulhamish podcast, Dom Betts. Thank you very much for joining me in the studio, Dom. Seventh on 19 points after 11 games. Is this where you expected Fulham to be, or were you a bit more confident that it would be slightly higher?
I think we're about as close to the top as I expect us to be. Maybe, you know, the placing is a bit different, but I think, you know, it's so close to the top of the table at the moment. I think, what, 8 points separate about 25 teams, it's, even as more as in the league. But, it, yeah, I think it's it is the point total is where you expect us to be. But I think the next 5 games between until now and the next international break in November, over the next 4 weeks, is they're all huge. They're all games where, I said it on the Fulham Fan Show last night, that if you look at them individually, they're games you probably expect to get 3 points from. So I'm looking at, we're away to Stoke on Saturday, Luton at home on Wednesday, away to Middlesbrough the following Saturday, then home to Hull the Saturday after that, and then we finish it away to Birmingham. If you look at all those 5 games individually, you'd expect a win in all those games. But how many teams win 5 games in a row in the Championship? But I think, I don't know what's, everyone talks about the unbeaten run we're on. It's only like 5 or 6 games, but I'd rather us go for the game and end up, it's this thing when teams are afraid to lose as opposed to trying to win the game. And I think some teams do sometimes get that when you're on a long unbeaten run. So I think that, you know, if we're looking at these games, I think it should be at least, at the worst case, 10. At the very, very worst case scenario, 10. But there's no reason why we shouldn't be aiming for 15 points from these 5 games. I mean, there are some tough games in there. You know, our record at Middlesbrough isn't the greatest. Same with Birmingham in recent years. But, you know, these are teams, none of those teams I can see finishing in the top six. So there's no reason, if you are aiming for top two, why you shouldn't be winning all 5 of them games.
It's interesting you say about going for wins rather than be afraid about losing, because one other thing Neil Warnock says quite often about the Championship is making sure you don't lose, is going on these unbeaten runs to maintain that confidence, to not be derailed at any point. Why is it that you think that going for a win, even if it means losing, because surely if you kind of do that and it backfires a little bit, that your confidence psychologically is hit quite a lot, rather than even games that you might feel a bit disappointed you didn't go for and win, so long as you're not losing those games, it maintains a kind of a positive attitude.
I think, you know, yes, you can respect the point on 1 point, but you can go for those 3 points. I think a season that typifies this was, you know, it was actually Spurs over the last, I think maybe last season or season before, they lost about 8 or 9 games, but they won a lot more. Same with Chelsea, actually, when they won the league under Antonio Conte. They lost like 3 or 4 games this season, but they won like the rest of them. They only drew 1 game all season. That's why they did so well, because more often than not, when you've got the quality that we've got, we're going to go attack the other teams. We're most likely going to score, and I think sometimes we're a bit too afraid and too passive with the ball. So I think when you've got the quality we've got, I think going for the win is the most important thing, and I think we did see that in the Charlton game. If Dylan Phillips didn't have the great game he did, then we probably would have won that game. So, yeah, I think we have to be going out and attacking these teams, and I think it's not, I don't think it's that we're not very clinical. I think we are fairly clinical. It's just we're not creating simply enough chances, you know. I know we scored a bit more goals, you know, as we were previously. Obviously, we got 4 against Reading and 2 against Charlton. But, yeah, I think this sort of stretch of games is a really important stage for us to sort of make a statement about what we're really going to achieve this season.
I know that when we spoke at the start of the season, you were happy, really delighted with the loan signings of Ivan Cavallero and Anthony Knockar combining with Mitrovic, was kind of a formidable Championship front three. They've combined 6 goals and 5 assists so far already this season. Are they already proving at this early point how shrewd the business was, that even though on the face of it, it looked like Fulham needed quite a lot of additions at the back, that actually when you've got a front three like that and Tom Cairney looks like he's back to his flowing best, that in theory, it doesn't matter if you're conceding 1 or 2 goals because those guys are able to just contribute so many goals.
Yeah, I think our game plan this season isn't to try and win a game 1-0 or win a game, you know, 2-0. I think it is, well, the only way we're going to win is by scoring more goals than you. And if we keep a clean sheet like we did against Reading, we did against Millwall, then great. But yeah, I think they've done well. They just haven't all clicked at the same time enough times. So I think if they all, that Millwall game, everyone was on it. And that showed what the potential of this team is. And, you know, we want to see that more. But I think, yeah, Cavallero is an interesting one because he often fades out of games, but then he'll cut inside on his right foot and ping one in from 25 yards out. So you're like, well, if you're going to do that, then maybe you can do this. But I also think the way we play is actually, I'm not sure if it's necessarily 100% suited to the way that Ivan Cavallero likes to play, because obviously he likes to play on the last man and sort of, you know, beat him on the inside or get behind him. And obviously, if we had the ball, that's not going to happen. But I think Knockart, on the other hand, is, I'm not saying he tries too hard, but I think he's trying to do everything at once. I think that's the biggest problem. Sometimes he does the shot instead of looking for the pass. I mean, you know, if you look at one of the goals he scored, I can't remember who was against when he sort of crossed it and it went into the back of the net. I can't quite remember who it was against. One of the home games over the last sort of month or so. But I think they are working, and they're a lot better than obviously what we had previously in the likes of, you know, Lucas Piazon, Floyd Aiyise, Niskin Scabano, Abubakar Kamara, you know, even up front in Rui Font. So, yeah, it's definitely improved on what we had last time. And I think, you know, we've got that front four settled. That's one thing we know what the starting 11 is going to be. So, yeah, I think I'm really happy with what they've done. You know, the signers have been very good so far. Just seeing if they can all click at the same time a few more times, apart from just one or two games.
One man that departed for them over the summer was Ryan Sessegnon, joined for about £25 million to Tottenham. It was one that dragged on throughout the summer that only got done right at the end. He hasn't yet made an appearance for Tottenham. He's back in training, but not going to play this weekend. How do you view Ryan Sessegnon leaving? Are you now thinking £25 million for a player that hasn't even made an appearance yet for Tottenham? Actually, for Fulham, in the short term, as well as long term, they knew Sessegnon was probably going to leave. They got good money for him. He's not really playing that much in the Premier League. He would have missed the first couple of months for Fulham anyway. And actually, Fulham have had that money. They couldn't really spend it at the end of that window, which would have been frustrating. But in hindsight, was it actually kind of a win-win for everyone?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, as you said, he wouldn't have played for us up to now because I think he's had a hamstring injury for the first couple of months of the season. And, you know, his contract would have expired in the summer. I don't think he would have signed a new one. And so it was either you take £25 million now and you lose him for the season, or you keep him and he goes for free. But at this rate, it's like he's missing half the season. So it does seem a very good bit of business by Tony Khan. And I think maybe the injury was something that did hold up the deal. You don't know. You don't really know these sort of things. But yeah, I think at the moment, looking at it now, you know, Sessegnon looks like a good bit of business from the club. Getting £25 million for a player with only 1 year left on his contract, who's only played one season in the Premier League, is a very, very good bit of business. And, you know, twin brothers coming to the side at right back has looked fairly decent. I mean, you know, he's only like 19 years old, so you can't expect him to be setting the world alight. But yeah, it's very... It was at the time very, you know, sad that one of players you brought through your own academy, you know, and scored so many goals for you is leaving the club. But looking at it now, and you know how he has been injured for a fairly sustained period of time now, it looks a very good business by Tony Khan and the whole club.
Stephen Sessegnon, obviously in the England under 21 squad in their most recent games against Slovenia and Austria. Just finally, then an away trip on Saturday to Stoke. Now, it's a miracle, I think, that Nathan Jones is still in that job, considering he seemed resigned
He seemed to have resigned about three times.
Exactly. That interview where he says, I've gambled with my wife's life, I've gambled with my coach's life, and I've thrown it all away. But anyway, it is away at Stoke. They did win that game miraculously against Swansea just before the international break. Do you look at this and think it's actually a good thing they haven't sacked their manager because this could be the final nail in the coffin? Or are you thinking, there might be a slight bit of a renaissance happening?
It's a weird one. You can't work out if it's a good or a bad time to play them because, you know, they did beat, you know, top the league Swansea away from home. I think it was the last minute as well.
Yeah.
I think they did deserve the win in that game, actually, going what the highlights were like. And, you know, they haven't won at home since, like, March. Early March against Nottingham Forest. You know, they're conceding goals left, right and centre. Mistakes in Jack Butland left, right and centre. Like, we should be winning this game. I don't care if they beat Swansea in the last game. Anyone can beat anyone in the Championship. So, you know, they are bottom of the league or second bottom the league wherever they are. So I think that you have to be looking at this game for a comfortable victory. I think this is a sort of game where, although how badly Stoke are doing, you can make a statement in a game like this, because they're still a fairly big club in Stoke. You know, they did beat Swansea City, and if we put, you know, three goals past them, then, you know, beating like 3-0, 3-1, then the rest of the league is really going to step up and take notice. And I think it is just about the front four clicking, and then if they do, then I don't really think there's many teams in the league that can stop them.
Thank you very much for joining me, Dom. That was Dom Betts from the Fulhamish podcast. Remember, you can catch the Fulhamish podcast every Wednesday night, the Fulham Fan Show, from 9 until 10 o'clock. So all Fulham fans, make sure you tune into that every Wednesday evening from 9 until 10 o'clock here on Love Sport. If you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Love Sport. This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking about the table toppers West Brom. Now, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Jez Mulholland, West Brom radio commentator and social media officer. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jez. 11 games in, 22 points, sat atop of the table, just ahead on goal difference. Was this exactly what West Brom fans expected, or do they think that it would take a little bit more time for Slaven Bilic to get what he wanted across over to his team?
First of all, thanks for having me, Kieran. I think it's come as a bit of a surprise to most Albion fans. You know, there was a lot of change in the summer. There was a few players that left, the likes of Craig Dawson, Jay Rodriguez, moving on. And, you know, the age of the squad has definitely been lowered. And I think Albion fans would have certainly given Slaven Bilic, more time to settle in and to get, to bed players into his team. But, you know, the way it's gone so far, it's incredible, really. We've had a super start to the season. We've got plenty of wins under our belt, playing some really, really exciting, free-flowing football. I think, to put it bluntly, in answer to your question, no, I don't think Albion fans would have expected it to go so well.
One man that has impressed many, I know a few of the guests we've had on to talk about West Brom have talked about Matheus Pereira, who scored twice, got four assists so far this season. How big a revelation has he been? And what in particular has impressed you about his performances for West Brom so far this season?
I think he's definitely been one of the standout players for us this season so far. I mean, he brings such an elegance on the football pitch. It's, you read some of the comments in our social media channels on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, but, we have fans saying that Matheus is a player that we haven't really seen at the Hawthorns before, or certainly not for a long, long time. He brings an elegance, he brings a flamboyance, and, if you listen to what other fans of other football clubs say about West Bromwich Albion in recent times, you think of West Bromwich Albion certainly under Tony Pulis in the Premier League, and you think rigid 4-4-2, you think, big, tall guys that are over 6 foot, that, difficult to break down, difficult to beat. He's a completely opposite player to that style. He's quick. He's got great low centre of gravity. His passing range is out of this world. Some of the passes that he's played this season have been absolutely unbelievable. Stuff that if Lionel Messi plays, passes that Lionel Messi plays, they're all over Sky Sports, they're all over social media, week in, week out. And this guy's up there with certainly one of the best players in the Championship for me, given the first 11 games.
I wanted to get your views also on one of the other new signings over the summer, Romain Sawyers, who signed from Brentford over the summer. He scored in the game just before the international break against Cardiff. What have you made of his starts to life at West Brom? And it's kind of the added bonus of it. Not only does West Brom get the player, but it denies another Championship side one of their standout players.
Yeah, of course. I think Romain, has come in as being a breath of fresh air to this football club. He's obviously a West Bromwich Albion fan. He left the club about 6-7 years ago, was released. He was on the fringes of the first team. He didn't really get his chance, but he's come back this season, and he jumped at the chance to come back as well. You can just see the way that he walks around the training ground, the way that he is at the stadium, the way that he wears his heart on his sleeve for this football club. You can tell that it means so much to him, and you could see that in his celebration when he scored against Cardiff before the international break. I think he's brought a much needed calming influence to our midfield. I mean, if you watch him play, such an elegant footballer. I know I've used that word before to describe Matheus, but, that's probably the word that I'd use to describe most of our team at the moment. We have a very elegant team that are very, very confident and composed on the ball, and Romain certainly up there with one of the best midfielders in the league. He complements Jake Livermore very well as well. So it's not just the fact that Romain has been playing well, but he's also brought out the best in Jake Livermore. Jake has had a super start to the season. I think a lot of Albion fans have noticed that, his performances this season have been, are better than they were last season. So I think the two of them in the deep line midfield role have certainly, they certainly link up well together. They make things tick, and a lot of our moves are started from Romain dropping deep, getting onto the ball, and Jake provides that, that midfield screen when, if it breaks down and everything. So the two of them certainly complement each other very well. I think that's given us such a solid base to build on, and that's allowing the attacking players, the likes of Grady Diangana, Matheus Pereira, Matt Phillips, and, whoever the front man is, to really shine.
It was interesting to read some of Slaven Bilic's comments after the 4-2 win against Cardiff. He was quite complimentary, saying it was a great game and playing on the front foot and playing full of confidence. But he did also say that his side have to be more ruthless, more mature. Is that just a sign of how ambitious Slaven Bilic is, that even with a win like that in a great game, a great spectacle, that he's still kind of trying to pick out the finer details of it and is still not satisfied even though they won the game?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think you're talking about a man who is a perfectionist. He wants everything to be right. He wants his team, you know, not only to be beating teams 4-2, you know, 3-2. He wants his teams to be beating them 5-0, 6-0 if there's opportunities to go and do that. And I think that's why he was a little bit disappointed about, you know, even though we won the game against Cardiff, it was the fact that we let two sloppy goals in. And there were chances to go and really kill off the game and to make it 5-6 because Albion were that good on that Saturday afternoon. You know, he strives for perfection, Slaven Bilic, and he wants his team to be as good as possible. And although we've made a really impressive start, and as I said in my first answer, that, you know, it's probably a little bit unexpected for Albion to be top of the table. I think Albion fans would have been hopeful that they'd be, you know, certainly in and around the top six after 11 games, but I don't think many of them would have expected to be top of the table. I know that we're only top on goal difference, but, you know, it's still an achievement after 11 games. It's always nice to be top of the table. But certainly when you speak to Slaven and, you know, when you hear his comments in the media, that, you know, he hasn't once said that West Bromwich Albion are the complete team yet. He hasn't once said that he's completely satisfied. He said that he's happy with the progress that his team has made. But he certainly feels though this team has, you know, another level to go up. And that's certainly exciting for Albion fans to hear, that the manager thinks that this team that is currently sitting at the top of the Championship table, you know, one of the top scorers in the division as well, won 6 games already. You know, we've already had some great away victories as well, beating some of the top teams in this league, some of the teams that are fancied to go to the Premier League this year. The fact that the manager is saying that certainly excites the fans.
And just finally then, Jez, up next for West Brom is a trip to the Riverside to take on Middlesbrough, who are 20th at the moment, just a couple of points above the relegation zone. Is this a good opportunity for West Brom to keep this run going, or do you think there'll be a real sense of caution going up to Middlesbrough, knowing that even though things haven't started brilliantly for Jonathan Woodgate, there are still some good players in that Middlesbrough side that could cause West Brom some problems?
Yeah, I think it's a tricky one. Obviously, confidence is high in the Albion camp at the moment. You know, we've only been beaten once this season in the league, and that came at Leeds. And the general feeling after that defeat at Leeds was that, you know, we really should have come away from that game with something to show for it, whether that had been a draw or whether it had been all 3 points. But, you know, it was kind of strange. I've never seen a group of players so upbeat despite a loss, if you understand what I'm trying to say, because they all recognise that they should have, you know, taken something from that game. But in terms of Saturday's game at Middlesbrough, I do think it's a tough test for Albion. You know, coming back after the international break, there's been a few of our players that have been away on long-haul trips. You've only got to look at Shemi Ajayi. He played for Nigeria over in Singapore against Brazil. That was on Sunday, so he's not long been back. But, you know, I'm sure he'll be fine to play on Saturday. But in terms of Middlesbrough, you know, I think their start has surprised a lot of people. Obviously, Jonathan Woodgate's first stint as a manager at any football club. But I think it's always difficult when, you know, when you're in a wayside, especially if you're in a wayside going to a team that's stuttering of late, top of the table. They'll certainly be looking at this one thinking, right, OK, it's a fresh start. We've got the international break out of the way. West Brom, you know, they've had a few players off on international duty. It might be a chance for us to catch them on a bad day, but, you know, hopefully that's not the case. Hopefully Slaven's side will be, you know, will be full of confidence, as they should be from the start they've had this season. Hopefully we can continue our good form and pick up another good 3 points.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jez. That was Jez Mulholland, West Brom radio commentator and social media officer, talking about the table toppers who head to the Riverside on the weekend to take on Middlesbrough, who are struggling right near the bottom of the table, just a couple of points off the relegation zone. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, of course, 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next, we'll be talking all things Luton.
This
is Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to share your views on your Championship club's start to the season, call us on 0208 7020 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in contact with us on this Thursday afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Luton now, and I'm delighted to say we're joined by Ross Lawson, LTFC journalist. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Ross. 18th place at the moment for Luton, 11 points through the first 11 games. Do you think that there'll be a concern that Luton fans will be looking over their shoulder quite a bit, or is it still that stage of the season where it's still so open that maybe if this is the situation in a month or two's time, then that would be the case?
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. At this point of the season, you're sort of one or two wins away from going from, as you said, an 18th right up to somewhere like 8th or 9th. So it's not too much of a worry currently. As I said previously, I think anywhere above the relegation zone will mark a successful season. We'd like some more points, obviously. We'd like to use more of our home form that has served us so well over the past couple of seasons. But as it stands, I think it's okay. It's nothing more or nothing less than that. But come the end of the season, I'd be very happy with 1 point per game and sitting in 18th, that's for sure.
Now that we're a couple of months into the season, 11 games in, I wanted to get your views on the transition from having James Justin and Jack Stacey to not having them now. Obviously, they both moved to the Premier League with Leicester and Bournemouth, respectively. How are we seeing that transition? How is Graham Jones dealing with the absence of those two? And in hindsight, should maybe Luton, even though you don't want to deny them a Premier League move, should they perhaps force a little bit harder to try and keep them?
I don't think there was much that we could have really done in terms of keeping them. We're a selling club. We have to be. And I think for the money we've got for both of them, I think we've done very well. In terms of the adjustment to how we're dealing with it in the new division without them, I think it's steady so far, without being particularly spectacular. Defensively, we have struggled slightly. We haven't got the clean sheet yet that we've been after. But attacking, it seems to be going okay. We're missing a couple of key players in terms of injuries. But I think once they're all bedded in and we can get sort of a settled back four, then we should hopefully be fit and firing and sort of seeing the impacts that the guys had all through last season.
A bit of contract news is the news that James Shea has signed a new undisclosed length deal with the side. He was one of the mainstays of the Luton side last season, winning promotion, obviously, into the Championship. But at the start of this season, he's been second choice to the club record summer signing of Simon Sluger. Do you think that he is perhaps unfortunate to not be the starting man? Or is that exactly what you do when you get promoted into the Championship, is you have to identify that you need perhaps some new players and that a goalkeeper is an absolutely key position?
I think come Saturday, we could actually see him back in the number one jersey. As you mentioned, Simon Sluger at the time was a very good signing and came in. And as you said, we needed that step up in quality and the experience. But I think with a few high-profile mistakes, Shea may be coming back into the role. Whether he's Championship quality himself is to be debated. But I think he's providing a much safer pair of hands currently or a safer pair of feet as well, based on the goal we conceded, or both goals we conceded against Derby last time out. So I think Shea will be back in there. He came with us when we were at the start of League Two, and he's obviously come through as well and come through the ranks. I don't think he's quite Championship quality, personally, but I think he's definitely earned the chance to prove himself and see what he can do. And I'd certainly want him to be starting on Saturday against Bristol City.
As you mentioned, in that game against Derby, Graham Jones said it was a 1-1 or a 0-0 game. There's very little difference in terms of shots, but it was two goalkeeping errors. If Luton are going to stay in the Championship, are these the types of games that, one, you perhaps have to get points out of, but also, two, Luton just simply can't afford? They're not a West Brom where they can perhaps afford to have goalkeeping errors because they've just got so much quality in their squad. But for Luton, are they just going to be absolutely massacred if they can't avoid simple individual errors?
I think that's part of it for sure. I mean, when you're in a new division, you need a couple of things. You need to be doing the basics right, and you need an awful lot of luck as well. And I think we haven't really done the basics right for a lot of part of it, and we've been missing a little bit of luck. When you go to somewhere like Derby, I'm not sure you can really expect to go there and get points. Anything you get is a bonus. But as you said, it's the manner of the defeat, where it was two goalkeeping mistakes which cost us a point, which we could have had. and been looking at a real bonus for. And I think, as you said, you know, you need things to be going your way. And currently, we haven't earned the right for things to go our way either. So we definitely need to put those things right. And as we said before, the home form is going to be so important. If we're making simple mistakes at home, then that's what's going to cost us. And those 3 points turn into 1 point or even nothing. And that's the point where we'll be looking over our shoulder and worrying. I'm wondering, you know, you don't want to get to a position, especially over the Christmas period, where you're wondering where your next point's going to come from.
So just one final one then, Ross. Up next is Bristol City at home. They're sixth currently. How tough a home game is this going to be, and what's a realistic expectation from this game?
I think it's a really big game in quite a lot of ways. We said before we had an international break, which we've now come back from. It's previously we were looking to carry the momentum from the last one, but now it's kind of changing the mindset and getting back on track when we haven't been. A win would obviously be a fantastic result, especially a no slouch for team. But we have to really focus on our home form and make sure we're getting what we need out of those home games. And therefore, anything you pick up on the road becomes a bonus. But certainly, it shouldn't be anything you're relying on to stay in the division. I think that's where the home form and Bristol City is a good chance to see what we can do and get some form and get some performance back, most importantly, as well, after a couple of sort of languishing displays recently.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Ross. That was Ross Lawson, LTFC journalist, giving his views on Luton, who will probably be looking over their shoulder a little bit. Currently 18th in the table, just 3 points above the relegation zone. A tough test on the weekend. They're up at home against Bristol City, currently sixth, who are just a couple of points off the top of the table. So a tough old game for Luton. They had to deal with obviously losing James Justin and Jack Stacey to the Premier League over the summer. Obviously, last season they had to deal with Nathan Jones leaving before the end of the season to go to Stoke, and that's not worked out particularly well. And then Graham Jones took over as the manager and guided them to promotion into the Championship. But things aren't going to be easy, and that game against Derby, you cannot afford to be making goalkeeping errors as basic as the ones they did against Derby. So if they want to be staying in the division, they need to avoid those types of errors.
Love Sport.
Hi there, we are James and Dan Twofort of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's mind.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words "Jesus saves" written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.